All right, ladies and gentlemen, pay attention to this. This won't last long. I've got this black box here I'm reading from. I don't own a cell phone, as y'all know. This is about a family structure, showing you simple things like how to live your life, how to find peace of mind, a close look at immortality. Our family has branched out from there, and it includes people like Mark Levin, the old great one, and a Glenn Beck, some of those guys. You can get hooked up with them too at the same time. So you'll have the podcast that we're fixing to do, Unashamed. Me roaming around in the woods down here, pandemic or no pandemic. It's $30 off, $69 for a whole year. Look, it's $3 or $4 or $5 an episode, for crying out loud. Yeah, what you look for on this black box is blazetv.com/unashamed. You can get hooked up with us, and together we'll make the world a better place.
I am unashamed. What about you?
I may change that net out, because you put that net to dry it out, because that other one I got is dirty.
It had a hole or two in it. I got it patched, but I got that in mind. I need to put mine out.
It is the one positive in the quarantine, because everybody's been fishing. I mean, y'all been doing some nets, so I've eaten Opelousas, which I hadn't had in a while. Jay's been catching the crappie like crazy.
Oh, well, I've gone with him 3 or 4 times. I've caught more fish.
Oh, you
fish.
Still got your net out?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you'll have op in there probably.
I mean, every time I go, there he is. I'm running with the ops. 2020. Is it 2020?
You going to run yours today?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to get one of them ops. You get two of them.
All right. Yeah. Well, look, I'll tell you this, because I cleaned 20 crappie yesterday. So if I catch one,
if you have some,
I'll give it to you for Father's Day.
Yeah, if you have the humpback blues, which is not the big one, but if you got a few in there, that's fine.
I mean, Phil, the last time I ran that, I had, I would say, 50 blues and one op.
Were they the humpback blues or the bullhead?
Well, it was some whatever kind of blue you want was in there. You know, I had eel cat, humpback, chucklehead.
That high fin one, which tends to be not big, not the bull, the lake blues. They're the darker blue.
They're a little bit musty.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. I know which blues are better than the other blues. I feel like having that argument about that guy. Like, we have this guy who claimed to know everything, and the guy, you know how these people, they try to impress you. They're like, oh, you're a commercial fisherman, huh? You'll remember this story when I tell you. And we're like, yeah. And they said, well, I'll tell you this, you know, that spoonbill, he's actually better than an op. But he's not quite as good as a blue.
Yeah, and look, I looked at Chase when he said that. Chase said, I always knew that guy was an idiot.
I thought, no matter what you ever say for the rest of your life, I'm going to struggle to give you any credibility, because you had that completely wrong.
Oh, did he ever.
For those better
than an op, not quite as good as a blue. I'm like.
So, and not only that, he's describing a spoonbill. So if you guys aren't familiar with fish, so a spoonbill cat, he's a catfish, but he's got a big old long bill on him. I mean long.
Like a boat paddle.
And he goes in.
It is a boat paddle.
He's an ancient fish.
He goes in and he's basically rooting up mud, and then that goes through his system. So when you open up a mouth of a spoonbill cat, what does it smell like? What's the smell?
Well, here's the rule I go by.
Smell like rancid gray mud.
Exactly.
Breaking news. I'll give you a quarantine rule to live by. Rednecks coming by.
Rednecks.
Phil?
That was Dan.
Look, here's the rule. If something stinks when it's alive, you don't want to eat that.
That's right.
If he's alive and kicking, and you're like, boy, that thing stinks.
You can smell him before you get to him. You don't want to eat
you
that.
You throw him back.
But, and that's just general knowledge, right? But that should be pretty simple.
When something dies, it stinks. Okay, I'll give you that.
Yeah.
But if it's stinking alive,
a spoonbill catfish has no bones. Not one bone.
All cartilage.
See, that's the evidence I say that there's a God on these little details about life. Now, how in the world did that happen? There's not one bone. And look, and what I like about it, which is because it's kind of a trick, because you think, oh, well, that would be an awesome fish to eat. Nope.
Nope.
You see what I mean? Because it's already filleted.
Yeah.
And they claim they're on the endangered list, but there are millions of pounds in this river, so I don't know who came up with that.
Well, aren't they – isn't their eggs like a delicacy?
Caviar.
Like,
they caviar. Eat them as a – I think it's a poor man's caviar.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a poor man's
caviar. At it.
Have you ever tried caviar?
Yeah, I have.
Do you like it?
I mean, ooh. No, it's salty.
It's too salty. I don't know.
By the way, you said, well, how did I try caviar? Because I was with Willie, and he said, I'm buying. Let me try some caviar. I was like, I will if you will, and you pay for it. Paying a $400 for a spoon of fish eggs? No. I'm out on that.
It's a racket.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it just wasn't that good.
Well, then I tasted it and thought, they just put some salt.
I guess it's an acquired taste.
Fish eggs.
But I don't know. Eggs just doesn't understand.
I mean, I like it.
I don't like
chicken
the
egg.
Texture of fish eggs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably the thought
little
of it.
A little much.
So I'm riding out here. It's about a 30-minute drive when Jason and I had to come out to – this is where we grew up, but we live in town.
Well, you need to slow down. It takes me 40.
Oh, no. I drove it like I did when I was 16, Jay. Yeah. I used to do Tokyo Drift before Tokyo Drift was cool.
Well,
out here.
They're going to get you.
I know. But that's you were famous now. We'll be fine. Yeah. So anyway, so I listen to different – I like different genres of music because you're kind of like all worship these days. Right?
All worship 2 years ago.
Which I like that because It was a good way to – I do a lot of worship. Too, and you learn a lot of the songs. But I still get a hankering for some other kind of music. So today was 70s day. You know, there's a satellite radio. There's a thing called 70s on 7. So it's just everything is from the era of 1970 to 1979, every song that you hear. And I was listening to that today coming out here, and I was thinking, of course, I guess everybody thinks that their era of music, kind of their coming-of-age era, is the best. I mean, I assume that.
I don't.
Well, except for Jay's. Your 80s would be your...
I don't know. Huey I can't Lewis. Match the numbers. No, I'm kind of a Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Well, that was 70s and 80s.
Was it?
Yeah. But I was thinking about...
Creedence Clearwater.
So what was that? CCR.
Yeah. Oh, no. When was
bad,
that?
Bad
60s
company.
Mostly. 70s, you know, today, here's the lineup. So listen to this. So Linda Ronstadt... She had a son. So these are the songs I heard coming out of Linda Ronstadt, Queen, Chicago, Eagles, yep. And then the last one, which was one of my favorites, was the Commodores singing Brick House, which is just, yep. I mean, I'm about to jump out of the truck. It's so good. But I thought, you talk about an
era.
That's
what I wanted. She's a brick.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I've always said I didn't.
I mean, that was an era.
I hated their politics. I said, but they were the greatest guitar pickers of all time, that group.
Yeah.
Late 60s, 70s.
Early 70s.
I think.
And I heard, you know, you liked that music. So obviously we all, that's what we grew up with, you know, the late 60s, early 70s. But I mean, I just thought about what an era of music. You know, now music seems kind of the same. It does. It's just, you know, I don't know. It's not that good
but
to me.
Like my daughter, the song she's listening to, I've never heard. You know what I mean? She was like, listen to the song. But so I mean, it's just.
What is she? She likes popular music? I mean, does. Just,
I have no description for this.
You don't really know genres.
It seemed kind of beat-boppy, computerized type music. You know, little small gangs of young people singing it. I'm assuming they're dancing around.
I seldom listen to any modern
music. Well, you remember, Dad, when we were doing your book tour, some young guys, so they had their idea was, and it was funny, I have to say, because at first I wasn't sure. I thought, uh-oh. So we want your dad to listen to this music, like they had music videos and they were modern music. Do you remember doing that?
Oh,
and
yeah.
So dad had his earphones on and he's watching this video. He's listening to music. So they start the first one and he's like,
and I had never heard of these people.
That's like, yeah, cut it. I can't. He said, how long do I have to listen? So I'm laughing so hard because I'm sitting over here off camera. And they basically did about 4 or 5 modern singers. Of course, Dad was like, I mean, I'm looking at this. All I see is butts and boobs, you know.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, it's just, I mean, I don't know. Where did people watch
it? These chicks singing.
Gyrating.
I get the idea.
The gyrations and all that, but it was pitiful.
Well, I have a rule. When someone like hand,
it actually
tries
worked
to hand
now,
me
they
their...
took advantage of my generation.
When they say, so watch this or look at I never look at it. When that someone, you know, they're just, hey, look, let me show you something. I was like, is it a video? Or, yeah, let me. It's funny. I'm like, I don't want to see that because I don't want to get in that situation. So I just defend them and move.
Well,
on.
It was funny because it was a great idea. And these were all young guys. And so they knew. They said, watching Phil Robertson react to modern music videos will be funny. And they were right. It was very funny. Right. And the stuff Dad was saying, you know, and I was laughing so hard. It was like being on the podcast.
Jason, on the cell phone, I never had to chunk a cell phone. I just observed others who had them, and I'm like, no. Nah. I said, that's too they're attached to it too strongly.
I mean, a lot of your principles are based on truth and good things, but you go too far because the hypocrisy is when you need to get a hold of somebody, you're like – who has a phone?
Plus, there's
call
a lot of
them now. I'm like, what happened to this no phone?
And
stuff?
Most people right now who are listening to us probably are watching the cell phone.
A lot of them are on the phone.
So I'm not telling everybody to get rid of their cell phones. I'm just saying I never had
you
one.
Remember the day you were arguing?
Your show is on the internet.
We had an argument one morning because they were like telling me where Northwest was and because it's always been there, right? Yeah. Well, I get out my phone and I got him and Si over there. I got a compass on my phone. And they're like, no, well, that's on your phone. I mean, how do you know that's right? See, it was like, because it was on the phone, it's technically on damaged, evil influence.
It's
false information.
So now we're arguing with the compass.
It's fruit from the poisonous tree.
Because it's not hanging around their neck with the little ball. You know what I mean?
Floating in the fluid.
I'm like, no, they got it figured out. This is it. It's a compass on the phone.
GPS. Yes.
Didn't believe it. So I said, no. I wouldn't believe that. You follow that, you'll be in the Gulf of Mexico.
Well, so you'll love this story. There was a guy a few years ago. I went out and spoke at Camp Chioka, and there
which
was
stands for Christian Youth Camp. Always get that Chioka,
which is funny because it's Camp Chioka, so it's Camp Christian Youth Camp, which is kind of redundant.
I have a confession. I didn't know that represented that for the first 30 years.
Really?
Recently, somebody
you think
said
it was some kind of Indian.
I thought it was an Indian name because we live on the Washita River.
I didn't know till right now.
Chioka.
Dad just learned that.
Yeah. I just learned it.
Christian
I don't
Youth
know.
Camp.
Who would even think of such a thing?
I was pretty smart, though. I mean,
what's a weird name?
One of them subdivision girls.
So, anyway, I'm at Camp Chioka, and I'm speaking. Lisa and I actually were speaking. We're doing our testimony. And so, you know, you're trying to, you talk about some of the things you did that were wrong when you were a teenager. You're trying to convince these teenagers, don't go down this road. This is a bad deal. This is, we're trying to teach you something. Well, there was a young guy there. And once it was over, he came up to me and said, hey, could I talk to you? I said, sure. So we went out and sat under a tree because Jason knows we worked at camp for years. You were a camper at camp.
Yeah, it's a really special place.
It is. And it's really good because you sort of cut the noise off. And I was thinking about what you said about the phones because now, you know, you got to turn your phone in when you get there.
I mean, Willie runs it now.
Oh, yeah. John Luke.
Did he buy it?
No, it's a board that runs it, but it's a really great.
Well, Willie's out there all the time.
Oh, yeah. John Luke
fixing it
up.
They
claim he's re.
Oh, it looks incredible. You wouldn't even recognize it, the work they've
done. Well, ever, you know, 40 or 50 years, you might ought to do a little up.
Well, it's 60 years old. That's right.
Yeah.
So, anyway, but the spiritual environment's always been great because you're taking kids like out of the rat race world and you put them out in the middle of the woods and you teach them the Bible.
Yeah.
And so it's amazing what happens over the course of a week. They kind of come in like typical teenagers, but by the end of the week, they're singing songs and they're crying.
You adapt to your surroundings.
You do.
You know, you take the cell phones away and all that, and they have to go through the 24-hour, you know.
Withdrawal.
Yeah, right. Their hands are shaking.
So,
I see them at my house all the time. They walk up there, and I'm like, it's still there. And they're just, I want to see the phone.
So this kid named Trace, he's at the time, he's 18 years old. And he starts telling me his story. And it was amazing because his parents, they were from Kansas. And they were fans of the show. This is years ago. The show was really still going on, really hot. So they wanted to come down because Sadie was going to be there and Reed and Cole and, you know, our kids were going to be at camp. So that was the draw. So his sister, who was, I think, a couple of years younger than him, really wanted to come. And so he thought they were just bringing her down to drop her off. And he was coming with them. What they didn't know is his parents had packed him a bag.
Oh, you're going too.
Yeah, he had graduated high school. He didn't know they packed him a bag. So they get down there. It's like, okay. And then they're like, all right, well, we'll see y'all, you know, next week when we come back to pick you up. And he's like, well, what do you mean, y'all? I'm not going anywhere. I mean, I'm not staying here. And they're like, oh, yeah, you're staying here. You know, because he had been living a terrible life. He was a prodigal son.
And he came to the Lord from it.
What he did. And yeah. So he said the first thing they took up the phone. And it was like, he was livid, you know, he was like, what kind of deal? So literally they left out of the thing. He's just standing there in front of the mess hall, like.
And mom and dad are waving.
They're waving by with his little brothers.
I like the idea.
I didn't
they were at their rope's end with
so
it.
So here's what's interesting. So what happened? Well, let's take a break and I'll finish the story. So since you're not on the internet, Dad, you don't know too much about going online and protecting your private network, right? Your information.
It never crosses my mind.
So. Phil, when Phil goes online, that means he has a fish on the actual line. His private network is him and Kay and the dogs and Dan.
These people should be happy that there's just a few like me.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Just a few.
That's right. If you didn't have online businesses, you wouldn't need that, right?
There you go.
So we got a company, ExpressVPN, which is virtual private. They're going to protect your private information, your network, every device that you have, smartphone, computer, tablet. These guys are really good. They're the fastest. They're the most trusted VPN on the market. Number one rated by CNET, Wired, all these great, you know, it's a great business.
What is it? Virtual private network?
Yep.
That's what it means.
VPN.
If I ever enter that particular zone, the networking, whatever, what do you call it overall?
Be careful before you say something you'll regret.
What do they call it?
Well, it's just.
If I ever decide to get into the internet world,
private network,
I will call these people.
Oh, there
online.
You go. That's right.
Online.
Online. There you go. If I ever decide to get online, I'll call them up.
Monofilament.
So to protect your online activity, go to ExpressVPN, expressvpn.com/Phil. Which is comical because Phil's never going to go there, but expressvpn.com/Phil. You get 3 months free with your 1 year package. That's a pretty good deal. Save yourself some money. expressvpn.com/Phil. So what happens is he's there. First day, he's just mad as a hornet. You know, but he can't. What are they going to do? Just walk out and leave? He doesn't have a rig. He can't drive anywhere. They took his phone. So first day, he's just mad. Second day, he said, I started kind of listening a little bit, you know, and I thought, well, I could be worse, you know, places. And by day three, he's kind of softening to that. He said, well, you know, the Robertsons are here, and he got to meet Sadie and, you know, Reed. And so now he's kind of warming up. So I come into the picture about day four, and Lisa and I share our story. Well, of course, he loves the Robertsons. That's why they came down here. We share our story. Well, my story is his story. I mean, I was where he was at the same age, except nobody left me at Camp Chioka. So we do our story. But now I see him. He's shredded. I mean, like his heart is open. And so he tells me his story. And I said, well, let me tell you the story that changed me, you know, because I'd already done it. But we went through it again. So this is like day four of camp. Well, the last day of camp, he gets somebody to call me and they say, hey, Trace is going to get baptized at camp. And he wanted you to come out. And I said, man, I'd love to, you know, because we'd had that conversation. So his life changed in 1 week. And so we became friends after that, and I stayed in contact. So he gets back home, and this story is in our Bible, by the way, Dad. So he gets back home to Kansas, and he says, you know, this phone is the bane of my existence. I mean, everything about it has not been good for me spiritually. And he didn't realize it till he didn't have it for a week. So he went out back, and I guess it would be because of us, our influence, and he threw it up in the air and he shot it with a shotgun.
Now that's impressive. I'm not easily impressed.
That's what he did.
Now there's a repentant man.
That's right. He shot his phone with his shotgun. It is a way of saying my life has changed. So here's the end of the story. The rest of the story is that about maybe 6 months later, he's a Kansas boy. He moved down here to West Monroe, and he went to work for Duck Commander, with old Stone back there putting duck calls.
Really?
Worked for us for about 2 years, and now he's a mechanic. He's a diesel mechanic. That's what he learned growing up on a farm. And now he works for Neiswanger's company up there. He's running the whole, I mean, he got married. Guy. I did his wedding.
So he's still around. He's still here.
Oh, yeah, what
he's
you here. Probably don't know is when he worked at Duck Commander, he asked me to kind of disciple him, you know?
Yeah.
And so I've had many a Bible study with him.
So he sent me a text. Look, as soon as the coronavirus deal hits, you know, the church is everything. We're not able to meet and all that. So he sent me a text. He said, you know, I just wanted you to know that me and Shay just got married a few months ago. He said, me and Shay, you know, we're young and healthy, and we want to volunteer for any older people in the church that don't want to get out. We'll go fight the crowds. We'll go to the grocery store. We'll go to the thing. And so that's what they've been doing, he and his little young wife. So you talk about, I mean, that's a life-change story. But I thought about it because I thought about the telephone.
That's good because Miss Kay just talked to one of the sisters, and her husband is at the beginning stages of Alzheimer's. So Miss Kay just called her up out of the blue, and the sister gave Miss Kay that information. But she basically needs a little help.
Well, we got them.
Yeah.
Don't
let me forget that when we talk to Miss Kay.
And then we have a few other volunteers too, which is really neat to see how people kind of pull things out.
It really
you
is.
Know, when you need to. So we're in John 5 today. We're finally getting back to our text. And we've been talking about, of course, that the guy got healed that was at the pool, you remember? He was a paralytic. Mm-hmm. And so Jesus heals him. And then the last time we talked about this, we talked about that there were two issues from some of the people there. One is Jesus told the man to pick up his mat and walk. That was the way he healed him. He said, pick up your mat, get out of here. And he did. He did what he was told. And all of a sudden, 38 years he's been an invalid. Now he's hopping and skipping and jumping. But Jesus slipped away, kind of his little Jedi, you know, way he did things back in that day.
Teleporting, I think, is the way.
Slipping into the crowd. You know?
Described it.
So anyway, so the people were there on this guy. They're like, well, who told you to pick up your mat? You talk about missed the forest for the tree. Who told you to pick the mat up? He was like, well, I don't know, just some guy.
The man who healed me,
you know? And so Jesus sees him later, and I think this is where we left off last time, Jason, I'm not sure.
Yeah, we were along in there. I mean, we've referenced some
of this. He says, see, you're well again. Then he says, stop sinning or something worse may happen. We talked about that. But then what that leads to is Jesus now having an argument with these people about the Sabbath. Which is crazy because they kind of missed the whole point.
Yeah, actually it says the man that was healed didn't even know who Jesus was.
Didn't know who he was.
Didn't know who he was, for Jesus had slipped away. So it wasn't like the man that healed me told me. Just said, I don't know who he was.
Well, I had just introduced the idea that he was basically, since they were accusing him of working on the Sabbath,
right?
He then, because I never hear people bring this up, he then got into what he does in 16 and 17 when he says Jesus, because Jesus was doing these things on the Sabbath, the Jews persecuted him, which was the ugly portion of this. How would you like to persecute the Son of God? I mean, Jesus said to him, my Father is always at his work to this very day, and I too am working, because it was the Sabbath day. Because he was going back to Genesis 2, and they're like, what? Because they don't realize he this is the Son of God. Hey, we wrote the idea of the Sabbath, but you've missed it. We're working. And which, to bring back to the phone issue, you know, think about how many verses, you can Google it, I'm sure, where it says the Lord calls you, which is, you know, when you think of call, somebody's calling you, you think of a phone. But in actuality, that's what he's doing, that he's working every day, 24/7, calling people to him.
And they missed the point that Jesus makes, because you remember in one of the other Gospels, he says, you don't understand the Sabbath. The Sabbath was created for man, not man for the Sabbath. In other words,
Where's that at?
It's in one of the other Gospels.
Yeah, it's good.
That's a great way to look at it, because think about it. He was saying, look, I, God, the creator, which, by the way, that was the real problem here. He was comparing himself to God. That's what the text says here. He said, I created the Sabbath as a rest day for you. This was for your benefit. But now you've turned around and made that into law, like as if
you can't even help some.
You can't even help somebody. You know, and he went into that about how that the idea was, you know, one of you says if you're, what do you say, if your ox falls in a ditch, well, you got to get him out of there.
Mark 2:27.
Yeah, there you go.
The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath.
Which was a great principle.
Yeah.
Because what he was saying was, you're right, Jace, I created everything, but then I still sustain everything. So you can't, God couldn't quit
working. It's just
working.
Funny to me. He's like, I'm working right now.
That's right.
Like, they didn't get it.
No, they didn't get it. Well, like, that was talking about?
There's a lot of humor in the Bible that it has to be. It was written for our humor.
That's right.
Why else did it? Because they were like, you're working. Mm. We're having a conversation here. He's like, yeah. Because you know, he's calling them.
Really? See, I thought it was hilarious when he tells the guy, oh, I see you're still well. I mean, that's funny to me. That was a sarcastic, like, well, of course he's still, you just
well,
healed
I also
him.
Think it's kind of humorous when he's like, stop sinning or something worse is going to happen to you.
Worse than being an invalid for 30
think,
years.
Well, you don't think that's funny, but it kind of is.
It is.
You know what I mean? He's like, you thought that invalid 38 years was bad?
I have to have a little bit of sarcasm. It's one of my love
ones. I think the funniest has nothing to do with this, but to me, the funniest thing in the Bible is when the guy was the demon possessed person was hollering behind who was it Paul and Silas
yeah maybe? Paul and Silas and
they, it was a girl
yeah it was a woman
it was a girl remember it was a slave
just
girl.
The whole conversation is funny and then when they get down to the end it's like Paul and because somebody Simon tried to cast out the demon he wanted the power you know and right. They said Paul, I know. No, what was the exact phrase?
Jesus, I know, and Paul, I know, but who are you?
That's the sons of Sceva. Y'all got two different stories.
Okay.
That's two different stories.
Well, I know. It just popped into my head, but it's
now we got to go find it.
It's a funny story.
The sons of Sceva story was there was a guy who was he was saying he was casting out demons, and so then the guy had a demon, and so this guy.
Acts 19.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's read that story.
It's hilarious.
It is funny. What was the
But verse? It reminded me of that 11, I mean,
13 and 14.
Okay. Some Jews who went around driving out evil spirits.
That's who it was, yeah.
They tried to invoke the name of the Lord Jesus over those who were demon possessed. So they're Jewish. They're not converted, but they're trying to use Jesus' name. They would say, in the name of Jesus, whom Paul preaches, I command you to come out. Seven sons of Sceva, a Jewish chief priest, were doing this. One day, the evil spirit answered them, Jesus, I know. And I know about Paul, but who are you? Which is never good when a demon addresses.
But then it gets better.
Then the man who had the evil spirit jumped on them and overpowered them all seven of them. He gave them such a beating that they ran out of the house naked and bleeding.
You need to preach on that. If you can't preach on that, something's wrong.
Oh, that's right.
You know what I mean? You're out there trying to do, you know, the Lord's work and your heart's not in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of underlying principles there.
But, you know, I took it quite literally, too, Jace, because you can imagine all the years I've been in ministry. I mean, I've had people ask me to come throw out demons. But I've always been aware of that text and thought, you know, I know the power of Jesus can do anything. But I really don't play around much with the spiritual realm of taking that I can do that. I guess if you were confident and you just knew this is what God had called me to do. I thought about that verse. I thought I go down there.
But look, you already know by their name they thought they were something. I mean, think of that name. My name is Seven Sons of Sceva. And
I'm one
demons
of the
like
they were playing. They were playing. They weren't converted, but they were playing like they had the power over the demoniacs.
Yeah.
And which that's a bad line you're running on there.
Well, you know, I'm always wary of the spirit world.
I am too. And you know, even you have the verse in Jude where it says you shouldn't even, you know, joke about or we get that inference. You know what I mean? Yeah. And he's like, no, we don't do that. Yeah, you know?
That's right. Even the evil one. That's right.
I've run up on this type situation before, but I just stick with point them to Jesus, right. Point them to God loves them through Jesus. He's died for you. He'll resurrect you from the dead. And I just wade through the cursing I'm taking at the time. You know, I've had them just cursing and carrying on. If you'll calm down, I'll tell you got some good news here. But we've actually.
But it's also the point that it's not about us.
That's right.
Either. Most people, I mean, they obviously, the underlying theme is they were taking credit. You know, if I speak and somebody, well, that was really good, I always go, I say, well, look what I'm speaking from.
Yeah.
I mean, I appreciate it, but I have the greatest manual ever.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, because it goes itself. Let's take a quick break. All right, so none of us like losing our hair. It's a bummer for male or female. It happens more with males, I guess, male pattern baldness, which is a gene that basically runs in your family. You know, of course, we have a lot of hair in the Robertson family, but
actually have mine up right now.
Yeah, I know. So people will thank you.
They do. Every time I do this, they're like, oh, my goodness, what happened to your hair? I'm like, it's under my hat.
So for you guys out there that are not having to keep your hat under your hair, hair under your hat, you want to be able to hold on to your hair. So we got a company for you, Keeps, which has been one of our longtime sponsors. And basically they have two FDA-approved hair loss products to be able to help you keep your hair. It's not about regrowing. It's about keeping what you already have. So basically you go online, you get a consultation from these guys, find out, make sure you're healthy enough to take everything. Go to keeps.com/door, keeps.com/door. You're going to get half off your first order, which is really good just for listening to our podcast. So keeps.com/door. You're right. So I've always had the mindset, Jace, that I don't take praise or criticism too personal. I mean, if somebody doesn't like something, okay. Sometimes I'm probably should be preaching stuff you don't like because maybe that's the Almighty.
But Jesus from his human side, you see hints of that.
Right.
I remember, having an argument about this verse when Jesus in 41 of chapter 5, when he said, I do not accept praise from men.
Right.
You know, and you think, well, why? Well, I would think he did,
because you worship him, right?
Yeah. Well, right. Or remember the time when he ran upon the rich young ruler and he's like, good teacher. And he's like, why do you call me good? Nobody's good but God alone. You're like, well, what principle do you think he was trying to share with there? He was basically saying, it's not so much about me, but who I'm representing, even though that is me, but that's hard to explain. that's why they're having the same problem with the Sabbath, because he's like, yeah, I wrote that, I'm working now, and it's the Sabbath. I'm trying to save your sorry hides. Yeah. He didn't say it like that, but that's kind of the impression.
Well, and that's what I'm saying is I've met through the years a lot of really inflated pastors and church leaders who think of themselves more highly than they ought, as Paul would put it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's why I never wanted to be like that. I mean, look, I'm never as good as some people think I am, and I'm never as bad as others do. You just got a job to do. I mean, I'm called to do something, and so that's what you do. And we were trained, Jason and I were trained to make a man glad or sad. And really, that's what preaching
is. But it's really not
them.
About us. I mean, I keep hammering on this. You know, we've been crucified, and I've had so many discussions about people saying, well, I just don't know what the Lord wants me to do, and I'm trying to find what the Lord wants me to do in this situation, and I'm trying to figure out how to give my testimony, and it's just one question after another with that same theme, and I'm like, I thought you died. This ain't about you anymore. You know, our purpose is to allow God to use us to share Jesus. I mean, we're just get to be along for that is the part. We all have the same purpose.
Jesus said a couple of things.
In different ways, but.
Yeah. He said a couple of things. One of them is, if everybody loves you, that's the way they did the false prophets.
Yeah.
Then he went on to say, blessed are you when people hate you, when they exclude you, when they insult you, and when they reject your name as evil because of me. What he was saying is, a person really doesn't understand the work of God until some hatred comes his way and some insults, and you say, what that's showing you is you're beginning to get into the battle here.
That's right. You're making a difference.
I mean, this is not going to be easy. I mean, if you think so, you'll never be persecuted. You are on the wrong train.
But you know,
you
how
will
it is.
Be persecuted.
People think that some people just think they're closer to God. You know,
that's right. That's
right. I hate to say it, but they just they get behind this religious system. And they, you know, like this, the guy we read about, he was a high priest, you know, the seven sons of Sceva. And then some demon got a hold of him and, you know, beat the crap out of him.
That's exactly what happened.
I mean, he's like, okay, Jesus, you will, Paul.
And the fact that story is in the Bible, I mean.
What else would it be in there?
That's exactly right.
Well, you quoted Romans, you know, where it says, don't think of yourself more highly than you are. Right. I mean, that's a Bible verse. That's not a saying. That's in the Bible.
Right. For a reason.
But I also brought up that 41 because a lot of people, and you and I in the theological world, have been involved in arguments about, because some religious educated people, they don't like it when people pray to Jesus, you know, because they use this verse as an example.
Right.
They're like, you pray to God in Jesus' name. But here's what I want to say about that. Even though Jesus did say that, I do not accept the praise from men, I'm not with these people who made a fundamental doctrine on that, because now you're trying to put the Godhead into your feeble brain.
At odds with each other.
Yeah, and right. Like, oh, well, wait a minute. Let me, Jesus, cover your ears, because I'm going to talk to God the Father right now. Now, these beings, which we introduced in the last podcast, they're eternal. They're all-powerful. They're omnipresent. They're everywhere. They're all-knowing. You know, I've said many times, I use Matthew 11. You say, what does it mean to be all-knowing? That means you know what would happen if something that didn't happen happened.
That's right.
You're like, well, wait a minute, back up
you
the tape.
You don't hear that too often from C-plus minds.
Well, just think about it. You're like, oh, he knows, you know, God knows what's going to happen, and he knows what happened and what will happen. No, it's deeper than that, because you're trying to understand it in your mind. That won't work. He knows what would have happened if something that didn't happen happen. You're like,
alternate reality. Yeah,
he makes a reference there, and when he runs up on that city and he says, if y'all would have heard the same message they had, you would have repented a long time ago. That's where I'm getting that from. And I'm like, we just take that for granted, that he knows something that would have happened that didn't happen, but he's like, if it would have happened, this is what would have happened. Well, that's why he makes those little things that we sing songs about, but we don't understand the reality of, when he says, you know, I know I have the numbers of your hair on your head numbered. Well, we just take that for granted.
Nothing is going to get by me.
Yeah. We're like, well, he was just kidding. No, he wasn't kidding. He'd give you an actual number. You know, you guess the marbles in the jar. I mean, just think of the things we can do in heaven, Al. I can guess how many hairs are on your head.
And what I lost this morning, you know, in the shower. So, but if you imagine God being outside of time and space, which is what you're describing by all those words, omnipotent, omniscient, you know, omnipresent, he's looking at everything from our perspective that's happened or will happen, but he's looking at it, all of it, at the same time. He's outside.
That's right. That's why he wasn't saying, I don't accept praise from men, like, don't praise me. Well, that wasn't his point.
Right. He was trying to introduce
them to the Father.
Exactly.
We see a glimpse of it from things we invent. We made in God's image, and we make things like computers. Well, you just think of the information, the storage of information, and where that's brought us in the last 30 years. You're like, boy, that happened quickly. Just think of the information that is poured into a computer. And you say, man, what a device. But the one who gave you the ability to store information, just think what he knows.
That's right.
I mean, look what we've done as feeble human beings, Al, and just the information age,
I
guess we ought to call it.
So let's take another break. So this has been a hard time for small businesses during this pandemic. I mean, it's been rough.
Yeah,
people trying to keep doors open. Obviously, you can't do business. You know, running a small business is a hard thing anyway. We knew because we started one, and we struggled for a long time.
Ground zero up.
I mean, it took years to build it up. So, you know, one of the problems now that even without a pandemic, a small business faces is what do you do about your human resources? You know, you got to have a whole department. There's whole departments in big corporations. You got all these people, basically 70 grand a year to have an HR manager. So there's a company, Bambee, B-A-M-B-E-E, that has created basically a virtual human resources manager for you. They're available by phone, email, real-time chat, which is, of course, is a lot of people are doing now during the pandemic for sure. So you want to be able to check these guys out if you have a small business, you need some HR help. You go month to month, no hidden fees, you cancel anytime. So check them out. It's Bambee, Bambee.com/Robertson. You get you a free audit, which is great, and to find out if these guys can help your business. Bambee.com/Robertson. And you're right, Dad. You know, it's even rebooted great franchises like Star Trek. I'm a Star Trek fan. So they were trying to figure out how can they tell the story? Some people had died and actors are no longer there. So they went alternate reality. Somebody travels in time, changes everything. So the future, therefore, was changed. So now we got new actors playing. Yep. See what I'm saying? I mean, but that comes from your...
You're beginning to show that God created you.
That's right. Because where would you come up with that?
That's correct.
How could you imagine that? They got that.
Because it all comes from this basis.
That's right.
That's why I've said that. You know, I offended every Hollywood person that worked with us. Because I was like, you know, you get all this out of the Bible. They're like, what? You know, it's like Leviathan. You know, somebody come out with a movie, Behemoth, and, you know, all these creature movies. I was like, that's in the Bible. And they're like, that's in the Bible? I'm like, yeah, it all wraps around good and evil. And the idea, that's why I always do this with these products, you know, that they sell. Because they're selling godly principle, or they're trying to get your money, but it has nothing to do with what they're selling.
Yeah, the old rock and roll song, Highway to Hell. Somebody says, yeah, that's what Psalmist was talking about when you go down with the adulterous woman.
No, in Proverbs 7.
Yeah, Proverbs. Yeah. He said, what are you talking about? He said, with one of them guys, one of them musicians read that and said, good night, we make a song on that.
Isn't Judas Priest, is that who sings that? Or
who yeah,
sings,
I forgot who it
who
was.
Who does Highway to Hell?
No, that's AC/DC, I think. Right. Yeah. No, look, Phil, I have read that story to more people.
Oh, have you?
Teenagers. Yeah. Well, yeah, Proverbs 7, because people don't think that's in the Bible. I mean, it's quite the story. I mean, I'd like to reference it if I could. But he was warning against the adulteress, and he said, like in Proverbs 7:6, it says, at the window, speaking of humorous stories that's really not, he said, out the window of my house, I looked through the lattice, and I noticed a simple man who lacked judgment. So he was immature. He was going down the street near her corner, walking along in the direction of her house at twilight as the day was fading, as the dark of night set in. And you said, what does that mean? Oh, he was acting like he was just taking a walk, you know, about dark. But yeah, he was headed in that direction. Then out came a woman to meet him, dressed like a prostitute.
Of course.
Wasn't a prostitute, but she's dressed like one. And now he's happened to be going in that direction. It's a common sense story. You're like, oh, I see where this was going. And then she says, with crafty intent. And then it says, she took hold of him and kissed him, and with a brazen face, she said, I have fellowship offerings at home. That sounds so... You said, what's the point? Come into my house. Have fellowship offerings.
Of course.
So I came out to meet you. I looked for you, and I have found you. I have covered my bed with all these fancy sheets from Egypt. It doesn't say that, but colored linens from Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with all these different perfumes. Come, let's drink deep of love till morning. Let's enjoy ourselves with love. So right now is the touchy-feely part of the song. He was headed down there. It's romance. I got a perfume bed. I got linen. Let's...
you know, let's drink of love.
That means let's have sex. You know, but they're playing a game. But then she says this statement, my husband is not home. Now, once she said that, that dude should have taken off. Because then that context leads to the end, which is where the AC/DC song comes in. Because now,
I was wondering when you were going
to
get to AC/DC.
All at once, he followed her like an ox going to the slaughter. Uh-oh, this little love story, we got an ox getting his head cut off. Before, you know, like a deer stepping into a noose till an arrow pierces his liver. Oh, gross. Like a bird darting into a snare, little knowing it will cost him his life. And so then when the AC/DC part got to this, he said, oh, yeah. Many are the victims she has brought down. Her slain are a mighty throng. Her house is a highway to hell. So he's like, I'm on the highway to hell.
Yeah, yeah.
Bad. That's a bad
and
highway.
I listened to that song and said, yeah, tell me about it.
But isn't that funny? That is where that came from.
That's exactly where it came from.
So now you know.
So it sparked in my mind, Jace, something Job said. This is Job 31. In verse 9, Job 31 is one of the greatest chapters in the Bible about the character, what a man's character should look like. Here's what Job said. Now, this guy's ancient. You know, he's back in the day where you didn't see anything but ankles and eyeballs. You know, women's were covered up. But he starts off by saying, I made a covenant with my eyes not to look lustfully at a girl.
A covenant with my eyes.
Which is really powerful
Love
to
it.
Me.
It
really is.
Because
every Christian man at some point has to do that.
That's right.
Yep.
Because you can't just say, well, people need to cover up. No, you make the covenant. You make it first.
Yep.
And you're assuming they're going to. Because in this day and age, they were covered up.
Mm-hmm.
And he still had to make the covenant. But here's what he said, Jace. And I thought about that verse when you were reading it. In verse 9, he said, if my heart has been enticed by a woman, or if I have lurked at my neighbor's door, then may my wife grind another man's grain. You know, it's that phrase has always stuck out to me. Who wants your wife grinding up some other man's grain? And may other men sleep with her. So in other words, what he's saying is, if I'm going to go down that road, then why wouldn't my wife just be the same thing? No man wants that.
That's right.
So why would I be lurking at my neighbor's door, you know, or taking that stroll?
I mean, we're all men here. You're around men. The amount of crude jokes and just about it's ridiculous.
And about
I remember I was on a retreat, and we stopped at a store. I mean, there's preachers, and the preacher, there was a woman walked in front of us with crafty intent. You know what I mean? She wasn't dressed for the church social. But he made a comment. And, like, I forgot exactly what he said, but it was something that a preacher shouldn't be saying.
Or anybody, yeah.
Yeah. And I said, highway to hell. But he was looking at me like, I can't believe you just said hell. You know what I mean? I was thinking, I can't believe you. I didn't say it, but I just thought, I think he got the message.
Let's take
America one. Always, by the way, just a little afterthought there, always presents these wicked men who are always preying on the women, it seldom mentions this woman.
Yeah.
It works the crafty both. Intent.
It works.
Crafty intent.
It works both ways. Let's take one last break.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit fearlessarmyrollcall.com to secure your spot.
Yeah, it goes both ways, Dad. You're exactly right. And you see both in the scripture.
Well, the reason you brought up, I thought it was good you brought up, I made a covenant with my eyes, is because, look, if you're walking toward her house about dark, it's too late. Because once she comes out with crafty intent, talking about, oh, I got a smelly bed with some nice colored sheets. You see what I mean? Headed down that direction, you know where you're going. But you're like, oh, no, I'm just taking a walk. I didn't know.
And what they said,
she came out.
I've talked to them. They said, well, you know, I was just down there. What happened? Well, he said, next thing I know. I said, hold it right there on the next thing I know. I said, were you driving a vehicle? He said, yeah. I said, so you were stopping at stop signs and red lights, and you took a right and a left. Now you're telling me, next thing you know. I said, you drove up there.
Yeah. You know what?
Once you get to next thing I know, you're gone.
Here's the one I park up. When they, you know, we're on the couch, and we first is denial. I didn't do it. Wasn't there. You know, finally we, you know, get it broken down. Tears are flowing. Well, I slipped. And I'm like, no, wait a minute. This wasn't a slip is when the floor's wet, you know what I mean? And this ain't a slip. You got in your vehicle.
You planned it.
Drove over. There's no slipping. You're driving. This was a premeditated plan.
That was like driving to the water slide and getting on it and saying, you know what? I just slipped down the slide.
The only slip that's going on is you're slipping out of your britches.
You're at a water park.
Yeah.
That, you know
I just
mean?
Looked up and I didn't have any britches on.
Yeah. I don't know what happened. So I'm like, this is a sin that you need to own and that you can be forgiven of, and God has poured his grace out. But don't try to make it like, oh, I didn't know what happened. You know, that I always bring that up about when I would share in the prison, because it was always a slip. It was never my idea.
It's not my fault.
It wasn't my fault, you know? I mean, the guy just, you know, he said one thing, I did another.
That's right.
I wanted to finish the chapter up because he repeated the same thing, which is where he started.
By the way, the whole thing is about testimony. That's the framework he puts it in. He talks about all these different people that had testimony about him, talking about Jesus.
And I'm glad you said that, because I want people, when people say, I share my testimony, or I'm working on my testimony, we share God's testimony. Right. That was Jesus' whole point here.
Right.
And they had put their faith and trust in Moses, which was fine. He was a great man. But now that philosophy has led them to the one Moses was writing about, and he tried to come at it from the scriptures first, and then he like, okay, well, they have the relationship with Moses. So he says in verse 45, but do not think I'll accuse you before the Father. Your accuser is Moses, on whom your hopes are set. If you believe Moses, you would believe me, for he wrote about me. I'm the guy he was referring to.
That's right.
But since you do not believe what he wrote, how are you going to believe what I say? I mean, Jesus just had such a clever way of saying things that make you think, what did he just say?
Yeah. He said, one that God said is going to be a prophet like me, follow him. He said, remember when Moses said that? He said, he's talking about me. Can you imagine what they were looking? They were thinking, dude.
And by the way, the man who said that did a little powwow with Moses and Elijah
up
transfigured on a mountain.
Yeah.
I mean, he can back it up by saying Moses was there, because like, we just had
y'all
a little
remember
powwow.
Moses? And check this out. And he's up there talking to him.
Speaking of funny moments in the Bible, Peter's commentary during that
it
is
was
the
hilarious.
Funniest thing ever. Boy, this is a good thing that we're here all together. Should I build a shelter?
This feels like a church building situation here.
But I wanted to say, if you read Hebrews 3, the first six verses, it then talks about this, the why Jesus is greater than Moses. And he gets down, I've used this in a lot of my speeches, because it says every house is built by someone, verse 4, but God is the builder of everything. And he said Moses was faithful as a servant in all God's house. That was Jesus' point. Moses had the same faith y'all have today. But then he gets down to the end, and which is our point about the Bible and the law points to Jesus.
Correct.
He says, but Christ is faithful as a son over God's house, and we are his house if we hold to our courage and the hope of which we boast. That's why it's not about our testimony. We house
Jesus. Squeezed in between there, Jesus has been found worthy of greater honor than Moses, just as the builder of a house has greater honor than the house itself. For every house is built by someone, but God's the builder of everything. That's what they missed.
I love that chapter.
That's what they missed right there.
You got everything. You got evidence of God there, because you see a house. You know somebody built it. What if you didn't see somebody build it? Oh, no, they built it. We see the design.
Yep.
You have the evidence, and then you have the evidence that the builder is a lot more awesome than any other human being.
Yep.
So next time we come back to John, we'll hit two more of those signs we've been talking about that are coming up next. Good stuff. Hope you're reading with us. A lot of you have been telling me you've been studying the book of John. You're reading through it. There's not probably a better study in the Bible.
Everybody who comes to Jesus, the first book I always recommend, John. Read the book of John.
Because it focuses on Christ.
Tells you who Jesus is.
There you go.
So we're so glad you guys were with us today. You can subscribe on iTunes or Spotify or YouTube or Facebook. And be sure and rate us on iTunes so that other people can know about the podcast.